Welcome to Let's Talk Fleet Risk, a podcast for those who manage drivers and vehicles and want to reduce road risk in their organisation. In this episode, I'm talking to Dr. Nick Reed, founder of Reed Mobility and Chief Road Safety Advisor to National Highways, about the active vehicle safety technologies known as Advanced Driver Assistance Systems. We'll be discussing how the latest driver assistance technology is keeping drivers safer, why fleet managers need to pay attention to vehicle safety ratings, how telematics systems fit into the vehicle safety technology suite, whether drivers could struggle with any of this technology, the issue of maintaining driver concentration when these systems are doing some of the driving, and finally, a quick look at where we are now with fully self-driving vehicles. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Let's Talk Fleet Risk. My guest today is Nick Reed, a chartered scientist who for the last 20 years has worked consistently at the cutting edge of mobility research with a focus on road safety and transport technologies. Welcome to the podcast, Nick.
Hi, Simon. Great to be here.
Nick, I guess first, please, could you tell us about what that means? What is mobility research and what sort of projects have you been working on?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, it started back in my kind of PhD. I was studying psychology and visual perception. And I was looking at where I could apply that in something I was really passionate about. And that took me to TRL, Transport Research Laboratory, specifically actually on a project I'd seen in a magazine, which was about advanced headlights and headlights that swiveled as the car steered. I thought, that sounds fascinating. Where could I go and work on that? It sounded like an interesting kind of perception study. So yeah, I found out about TRL, Transport Research Laboratory, and was fortunate enough to get a job there in 2004 and worked there for 13 years. And that was all related to kind of driving behavior, road safety, new technologies, and ultimately automation of the driving task. It was something I really pushed for. And since working at TRL, I worked at Bosch and now independently. That's been a theme, you know, kind of the interaction between driver technology, road safety, and human behaviours. I think I bring a kind of interesting perspective to that.
Yes, it's a fascinating topic. And I remember the swivelling headlights. I used to do a lot of work with Volvo, and a lot of their cars that I had that that technology on it. So especially going down a country lane at night and the headlights would go where you were steering, which I thought was a fascinating and very valuable safety bit of safety kit. So I invited you on the show because I'd seen a fascinating presentation that you'd given recently on the current situation regarding self-driving cars. Now, that was obviously a look at what the future has to hold. But what I really want to talk about on this episode is more about the ADAS technology that's here and now. So ADAS, for those that don't know, stands for Advanced Driver Assistance Systems. And it encompasses the various active collision avoidance systems that can be fitted to current cars and vans. To provide some context on that, the British Road Safety Strategy is based around something called the SAFE system. So I was wondering if you could explain briefly, and I appreciate it's a very, very big topic, but just briefly what the SAFE system is and why ADAS technology plays a vital part in that.
Yeah, of course. And this plays into my other role, which is a part-time role for National Highways as the Chief Road Safety Advisor, applying the SAFE system in that context. So the SAFE system has four key principles. Firstly, that it's unacceptable that there should be any death or serious injury from people using the roads. But it also accepts that people make mistakes. That could be drivers making mistakes. It could be designers making mistakes in the way vehicles have been created. It could be regulators that have made mistakes. But ultimately, there's human error involved, and that will result in crashes happening. Now, the important thing there is when these crashes happen, they should be of a severity that is that prevents serious injury or fatalities from happening. We want to eliminate crashes ideally, but we accept that they will happen. And when they do, they should be suitably less severe to prevent those serious injuries. You need to take a multi-disciplinary approach to preventing crashes. There needs to be a systematic approach. And that's where this SAFE system comes in, so that if there's a failing in one area, the other areas can compensate and make sure that that injury is minimalized. And so there are five categories of area that people look at when thinking about the safe system. That is safe roads, safe vehicles, safe road users, safe speeds, and post-crash care. And there are different elements related to ADAS systems, these driver assistance systems, that I think are relevant to all of those different categories, and particularly safe vehicles. But we think about safe users. Do they support better driving behaviors post-crash? Thinking about eCall type systems. So yeah, ADAS kind of fits across many areas of the safe system.
And there's lots of different systems available, aren't there? There's a huge, you pick any modern car, there's a huge range of ADAS technology that's available. Some of it fitted as standard, some of it as optional extras. A lot of it's called different things from manufacturer to manufacturer. But, you know, what are the key systems? What do they do and how do they work?
I think two of the key systems that have been really impactful in improving safety are ABS and ESP, the anti-lock braking systems, and then the stability control, electronic stability control systems. So they only work when loss of control is about to happen or emergency braking is happening. What we're starting to see, what has been emerging, becoming more commonplace, are these driver assistance systems which work in everyday driving. So the likes of adaptive cruise control, the likes of lane departure warning, parking assist. So they have a comfort function, but also a safety function as well. And they use a combination of different sensors. Some use alerts to the driver. So they're informing the driver of a particular set of circumstances that have occurred and advising the driver to make a change. Or they actually directly work on the steering or the speed itself. So more kind of direct control over the vehicle. And that is starting to blur the lines between automation and human-driven vehicles. And that's another kind of human factors challenge that we have to address.
Yeah, and we'll come on to that in a few minutes' time. But you mentioned speed there, and one of the systems that I'm hearing a lot about at the moment is something called Intelligent Speed Assistance, or ISA. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and why it's sort of currently a hot topic?
Yeah, so ISA is a system. It can be advisory, or it can act on the speed of the vehicle itself, where the vehicle is aware of the speed limit that is applying at the time. That could be through a map, or it could be through cameras, or a combination, the cameras that are looking out for speed limit signs. And that can then advise the driver when they are above the speed limit, and the driver can then take action to be compliant with the speed limit that applies. Or the system can reduce the speed of the vehicle to that to be compliant with the speed limit that applies. Now, that system, as an advisory system, is part of general safety regulation updates from the European Commission. So vehicles sold in Europe, in the European Union, have to have this system fitted. The UK hasn't signed up to that general safety regulation yet, but then, you know, I think the vehicles that will be supplied to the UK will tend to have this system fitted anyway, so it's likely to be in place. It's an optional system, so it can be turned off, but I think it's very helpful to drivers to have that in place, especially in the context of speeds that are changing across our cities for very good safety reasons, and, you know, variable speed limits on motorways as well. If we can use systems that help drivers to be compliant, I think that's what drivers would like to see.
Oh, so I've got a system on my car, which is a speed limiter. So I can set that to the speed on the sat nav. The map will normally tell me what the speed limit is on the road, and I can manually set a speed limiter so that I don't go over that speed, if the, you know, especially useful when there's sort of average speed cameras and stuff. How are those two systems different? What's the difference between them?
So the speed limiter is set by the user. So the user can choose to set the speed limit to whatever they like for the current driving conditions. And then the vehicle won't exceed that speed unless the driver kind of actively chooses to exceed it. The ISA system is constantly updating depending on the speed limit that applies. So it's adjusts to the changing from national speed limit to 50 to 40 to 30. It will update the speed limiting that applies, or at least advising the driver of that speed limit, and then the driver can take action in response. So yeah, slightly different in that it's user controlled for a speed limiter function versus intelligent speed adaptation, which is dynamic in response to the speed limits that apply.
Excellent. Now, Euro NCAP, which is the organisation that arranges all the crash testing of new cars and gives safety ratings based on the results of those crash testing, they require a lot of these ADAS systems to be fitted as standard to, in order to score highly in their safety ratings. And that bar raises each year, doesn't it? As new cars come out, they demand a higher level of technology often and new systems to be fitted a standard. So how important should these ratings be viewed when people are making fleet procurement decisions for new vehicles?
Well, it's very important, isn't it? Employers have a duty of care to their employees, people who are out on the road day after day doing lots of driving in sometimes challenging circumstances. We want the vehicles to do as much as possible to help protect those employees and ensure that if they have incidents, which may indeed not be their own fault, could be the fault of other drivers, we want them to be as protected as possible. And so, yeah, some of these systems which can help avoid incidents from happening, ensure that that duty of care is fulfilled, I think.
And there's lots of instances where maybe the manufacturers haven't fitted a full range of systems onto the car. One of the most common ones is the sort of emergency braking systems, but some of the others like lane keep assist and adaptive cruise control, quite often they're an additional cost option, aren't they? So what is there anything we can do to sort of encourage people to take up those options rather than other systems like that, maybe having bigger alloy wheels or something?
I think I alluded to the point about them being a comfort function and a safety function. So I don't think we should overlook the fact that driver comfort is actually quite an important part of safety, that a driver can feel comfortable driving for long distances, especially in the fleet context. Some of these comfort functions actually help the drivers to stay alert and relaxed and attentive for long periods of time, obviously abiding by drivers' regulations and taking breaks and so on. But if that means the driver can do more driving safely and comfortably, I think that's an important part of safety. So I think reflecting how it supports driver welfare as well as safety is an important aspect of supporting the uptake of these systems.
And I guess to encourage that, really, drivers have got to be familiar with what all of these systems are and what they do, don't they? Which quite often they're not.
It's a really difficult one, and there's a really good website in the US, and I think there'll be something similar over here called My Car Does What, and you type in your number plate, and it will go to what model of car you've got, and then you can see which systems are typically fitted to that vehicle. And it has some really nice, very accessible videos that explain how that system works. I think there's a lot more that dealers can do at handover to explain what systems are fitted to the vehicle and how they work. But something I'd be really keen on is most cars, I think every car you buy today will have a screen and a great stereo system in it. That screen could be used when the vehicle is static to have really nice explainer videos to say how the system works in that vehicle, so that drivers are aware that the system is fitted, how it works, what it will do when it intervenes, if it's going to intervene in any driving contacts, like a lane keeping assistance system. And just help inform drivers of how that system works and so they can get the best out of it.
That website in America sounds like a brilliant idea. I'll have a look to see if there is something similar in the UK. And if I can find it, I'll stick a link to that in the show notes once we publish the podcast. Individual safety ratings and how they're calculated for different cars and vans are available on the Euro NCAP website. You'll find links to both the car and van safety ratings in the show notes. So just going back to the ADAS systems fitted to cars, vans are obviously starting to see a lot more of these systems fitted as well, but they've traditionally sort of lagged quite a way behind cars over the last few years. There's a lot of specific challenges, isn't there, with fitting ADAS tech to vans. Could you talk us through a few of those?
I think a lot of it comes down to cost. These are very functional vehicles that operate on their kind of day-to-day running costs, and inclusion of these systems does add somewhat to the purchase price. And so that has to be factored into the running costs of these vehicles. They're also very hard-working vehicles. So these systems, which might be fitted in locations that may get damaged or dented, that you then lose the functionality, or it's a costly repair. So I think there's some factors around that. But, you know, the evidence is there about the value that these systems bring in terms of safety and driver comfort. So yeah, ultimately, it's only going to be helpful in terms of achieving that vision zero of goal of the safe system.
And vans in larger fleets, we often see fitted with telematics systems. Most of the fleet operators looking for sort of good practice driver safety management will fit a telematics system. And while it's not an ADAS system as such, it can obviously help control driver behavior so that the improvement in safer driving means there's then less chance the actual ADAS systems might be called into operation. So what are your thoughts on how telematics sort of just fit into the broader topic of vehicle safety technology?
In terms of, gaining that understanding of how the fleet is being operated and some of the safety aspects, I think it's incredibly powerful. I'd think about it influencing rather than controlling driver behavior. It's there as a tool to understand how the vehicle is being used. And then a company can apply kind of management procedures to help improve and influence driving behavior. So in that sense, the system is only really as good as the management that's put around it. You know, you can have all the most insightful data in the world, but if you haven't got the management structures around to ensure that that those insights are applied and they influence driving behavior in the right ways, then it's not useful. So that's a really important aspect of telematics. The other is making sure the data that you're using is genuinely delivering the insights that you believe it is. I think you see many companies making lots of promises. I think you need to kind of scratch beneath the surface of that and make sure that the data they're providing from the vehicles fitted with the systems genuinely provides the insights that you think it is, and it's not just vaporware from the company selling the stuff.
I mentioned earlier that obviously a lot of the new cars on sale, they don't have all the systems fitted. Some are fitted with a basic range and others are extra cost options. But one of the things I've noticed with the electric vehicles that I've driven, they seem to be much more commonly equipped with lots of this tech and maybe the full sort of suite of driver assistance systems. So with the transition to fully electrified fleets, are there any particular groups of drivers that might struggle with some of this technology? I'm thinking on age or experience or, you know, things like that.
I think it's a great opportunity, isn't it? With the rush to switch to EVs, particularly in the fleet market, to get people into vehicles that have all of these ADAS systems fitted. And I think it comes back to that activity and handover of the vehicle. Is there that explanation of what systems are fitted and how they work? It isn't just a here's the key, off you go. There is a bit more to it than that to make sure these systems are used appropriately. And of course, you know, older drivers who may not have been used to these systems in the first place, or certainly weren't there when they got their license, may have more difficulty. But I think it applies to all age groups, actually. You know, if you've not experienced the system and you're not familiar with how it works, there's a real human factors challenge there to make sure that these systems work in an intuitive way. So I think it's on the manufacturers to make sure that these systems, when they're fitted, work in a way that is intuitive to the driver. And that is, you know, the control system, the graphics that are used on the screen, the sounds that are heard, you know, all of that works in a way that the driver understands and makes sure they get best value from it. Because a system that's fitted to a car but then switched off because the driver doesn't like it is, you know, useless. It's extra weight on the vehicle that's serving no purpose, and that we clearly don't want that to happen.
I wanted to talk also about the issue of bringing back the driver's attention. One of the things we commonly hear about autonomous vehicles is that the driver still needs to be able to take back control. And obviously that brings its own challenges if the car has been driving itself. But things like lane keeping systems and adaptive cruise control can mimic elements of autonomous driving and control the car's position within the lane or its distance to the car in front. And so the driver, you know, the driver still needs to be paying attention to take over fully again, doesn't it? Is it not problematic if some of these elements kind of lull the driver into a sense of false security, and all of a sudden they do have to sort of pay a bit more attention when they weren't doing previously?
Yes, yeah, it is. You know, the systems that are on sale today require the driver to be alert and attentive. Even the Ford Mustang Mach-E that came out this year, that was sold with a hands-free cruise control system. The driver still needs to be alert and attentive. And there are cameras in the vehicle to make sure that that is the case. And if the driver isn't paying attention, there are alerts to make sure they do face forward and are suitably alert and attentive to the driving situation. But you're absolutely right. You know, if the vehicle is doing some of the driving for you, in terms of speed control and lane guidance, there is clearly that temptation that that the driver can actually divert their attention to something else for a short period of time. The challenge there is that that short period of time might be the exact moment that their attention is required in order to prevent or mitigate the worst of a particular incident. So I think what we're going to see more of in the vehicles that come out over the next few years will be more of that driver monitoring. And we'll have to get used to vehicles that are fitted with cameras that are looking at the driver and monitoring their attention to make sure they are suitably alert. I think the technology is fantastic and it can definitely support safer driving, but it's a two-way process and there needs to be involvement from the driver until we get to the point where the vehicle can do it all. And at that stage, the game is very different and liability shifts to the manufacturer while the vehicle is being controlled in an automated manner. But we're not there yet. And so, yeah, this kind of driver monitoring is going to be ever more important.
So, and what you just said obviously takes us back full circle to why I invited you on the podcast, because of the presentation you'd given that I'd seen a few weeks ago on the self-driving cars. So, you know, that was a fascinating presentation, and you kindly redid that for members of the Association for Road Risk Management as well. It was called "Where Are We with Self-Driving Cars?" Now, there's lots of trials going on around the world on public roads. So my final question is really just, you know, where are we with that? How far away are they? Is it a realistic thing that's going to happen in the future?
Yes. I mean, how far away are they? If you travel 5,500 miles to San Francisco, you can see vehicles with no driver at the controls operating in busy urban environments. So it is happening. There are commercially deployed automated vehicles, driverless vehicles, working on streets of San Francisco and other cities in the US today. In the UK, we do have trials happening in lots of places, not least the CAV4 bus trials in Scotland. There's a whole suite of a number of different trials kicking off across the UK. And in the King's Speech a couple of weeks ago, there was the automated vehicles bill, and that has accelerated what is achievable in the UK. So as that bill comes to fruition, we will be able to get to the stage of commercially deploying automated vehicles in the UK. Now, the major challenge I see here, and it's something most of my work relates to, is how do we prove that they're operating safely? How can we collect data from these vehicles to give us the confidence that they're operating in the ways we expect them to? Are they behaving to the standard of a careful and competent driver? That's the language that's used in the bill. And I think we could be doing more to inform the public around the benefits and risks of introducing this technology. And I think that's something that's not gone on in the US, and it's why Cruise, a particular company you talked about in the presentation, has had some challenges recently with an incident that occurred. I think they haven't sold the technology well enough to the public, and that's caused some of the tensions that they've been experiencing over there. So yeah, lots of work to do around being able to prove safety, lots of work to do around proving their value to society, but ultimately massive potential in terms of safety, efficiency and accessibility of transport. It's really exciting.
Nick, that's been a fascinating discussion. Thanks very much for sharing your insight and your experience in all of this. It's a really interesting topic with all this technology coming through. I was just wondering whether you had any advice that you could share with businesses about how to raise awareness of these systems and what they do amongst the drivers that they employ.
I'm sure the audience will be very aware that for the majority of people who drive for work, that driving aspect is probably the riskiest part of their day. People are doing thousands of miles. It's a very important aspect of their role. So I think it's very important that people are informed about what are the latest systems that can support delivering that role as safely and as efficiently as possible. These ADAS systems that are coming through do give us the opportunity to improve the safety of driving, improve the comfort of driving, and make the experience better for both the driver and for the company whose fleet is out there on the road. So yeah, I think that the manufacturers doing better in terms of informing the customers around the way these systems work and what they can deliver, and then the fleets themselves being aware of those systems and understanding what their drivers are seeking from these systems as well, so that it all works together seamlessly and safely.
Fantastic advice to end on. Nick, thank you very much for coming on the show. I really appreciate your time today.
Pleasure. Thank you, Simon.
Brought to you by Driving for Better Business.